Hare Krishna, our great fortune once again to hear His Grace Vanshivadan Prabhu on 28th of December 2013. This is the second session of the day. Hare Krishna, on Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9. Hare Krishna.
Okay. Vishwanatha Thakur gives a very interesting commentary on this verse. So let's go through that. So we are in the next section, that 16 to 25, which is Krishna is the supreme object of worship. So in this section, actually Krishna is comparing worshipping Krishna and worshipping the demigods. That's what he's comparing in this section, and how worship of Krishna is supreme. Okay, somebody read this, please.
On the other hand, the happiness of my ananya bhaktas is given by me. It is not obtained by pious acts. They are at all times in sithyam, well-versed in matters concerning me, abhiyusana, and they are always ignorant of all other things. Or the phrase can be that they constantly desire to be in my association. For such persons, I take care of their attainment of wealth, yoga, and their maintenance, shema, though they do not expect such things. It would be unsuitable for the Lord simply to say that He performs these acts. Thus the word vahami, vahami, meaning carry, is used. The use of the word vahami indicates that the Lord bears the burden of maintaining their bodies, in the manner that the householder takes the responsibility for maintaining his own wife and children. Thus, one should not say that, like others, their attainment or preservation of bodily needs is due to karma.
Good.
Still, since you are Atmaran, enjoined within, and indifferent to all things as the Supreme Lord, where is the question of you bearing this responsibility? Because my ananya devotee has no karma due to lack of desire, naishkarmyam, his happiness is given by me. Though I am indifferent to all else, I have great affection for my devotee. This is the cause. One should also not say that in giving the burden of their maintenance to their worshipful Lord, the devotee shall lack of prema. In fact, they do not give to me that burden. Rather, I, by my own will, accept it. It should also be understood that I am not bearing it as duty in the manner that I create and maintain the universe by my will alone. Rather, being attached to my devotees, I take the greatest pleasure in taking care of their needs by carrying the weight of one's lover.
Right, so it's not that the Lord is feeling a great burden in executing this. It's not that the Lord is feeling, oh, I have to do this for my devotees, oh, it's such a big burden. No. He loves to do that for His devotees. Right? So it's by my own will. It's not that they do not give me that burden. It's not that the devotees are asking Him for anything. The devotees don't ask. Just like, what's the famous example for this? How the Lord provides even without asking. Yes, Sudama. Famous story of Sudama the Brahmin. How he never asked the Lord for anything, but the Lord provided everything. So, even though they don't ask, He gives. It's not a burden. It's not out of duty, like creation maintenance. But being attached to my devotees, I take the greatest pleasure. Because of that love, that attachment to His devotees, then Krishna is providing everything what the devotees require. Do you have any experiences like that? Personal experiences?
No.
Okay, we'll take one experience. Or maybe, anyway, Ekla Prabhu has been speaking quite a bit. Maybe somebody else is will have an experience. Okay, yes, Prabhu.
Recently, before coming to India, I used to do Sankirtan to sustain the temple. And at the time, our books all got finished. There was no money to take care of the temple for Sunday program. And the same week, an Indian man came with a truck full of books and money for the temple. So everybody was surprised. After bringing all these items, we went to ask him where he come from. We didn't see him again. We didn't see the car, we didn't see the Indian man. So everybody was laughing.
This is not so graphic a story, but also for me it was very meaningful in that Krishna helped me with the departure of my mother when she left this world, that Krishna arranged for me to be in New York City when she was getting near the time of her departure, and the hospice arranged a room for me just next to hers, and I was able to chant next to her bedside every day for like 1 week, you know, chanting many hours a day and reading Bhagavad Gita to her. And on the actual day of her departure, I was able to do kirtan for her as she was departing. And the day of her departure was in the month of Kartik on Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day.
Rebo!
I cannot imagine that Krishna would make such an arrangement to take such good care of my mother's departure.
Rebo, that's great. Okay, fine. So now Krishna continues to speak. So this was Krishna was somewhat quite excited about speaking about his devotees. So he took a detour in between, and then once again he comes back to demigod worship. And so the 23rd verse. This is the 23rd verse. Ye apyanya devata bhakta yajante shraddhayanvitah devi maeva kaunteya yajanti abhiti purvakam. Those who are devotees of other gods and worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way. Abhiti purvakam. Right? So, as far as demigod worshippers are concerned, they are doing it in a wrong way. And Prabhupada gives a good example for that. He says, the demigods are, so to speak, different officers and directors in the government of the Supreme Lord. One has to follow the laws made by the government, not by officers or directors. Similarly, everyone is to offer his worship to the Supreme Lord only. That will automatically satisfy the different officers and directors of the Lord. The officers and directors are engaged as representatives of the government, and to offer some bribe to the officers and directors is illegal. This is stated here as avidhi purvakam. In other words, Krishna does not approve the unnecessary worship of the other demigods. And 24th verse he says, I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices, therefore those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. And then 25th is the famous verse, Yanti deva vrata devan, pitrin yanti pitra vrata, bhutani yanti bhutesha, yanti madhyajino pavisam. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me will live with me. What is the famous analogy Prabhupada gave for this?
Train.
Yeah?
Train.
Yes, the train and the tickets. Okay, wherever you take the ticket, you go there. You cannot purchase ticket and go anywhere else. So whomever you worship, you go there. Yes, ma'am.
Really quick question. What does Prabhupada mean by going to the ancestors?
Pitraloka. The planet of Pitraloka. Pitrun yanti pitravrataha. That refers to the Pitraloka. Well, in the Pitraloka, the Pitraloka is a heavenly planet where the ancestors go. Right, so those ancestors who have performed pious activities, they go to Pitraloka. It's like a heavenly planet. It's also the abode of Yamaraj. Right, so, and they will continue to remain over there as long as the descendants, they perform Shraddha. That is why it's said in the family there should be a son who does Shraddha for the ancestors. So when the descendant does Shraddha for the ancestors, Shraddha essentially means actually worship of Vishnu, and offering the remnants of that worship to these ancestors. And by that they get purified and they continue to remain in the heavenly planets. Otherwise, if the descendants don't offer the Shraddha, then the descendants will go down to hell. So they are maintained in the Pitraloka on the strength of the pious credits given by the descendants. Okay, so that's Pitraloka. Ghosts and spirits, where do they live? They can live anywhere. Ghosts anywhere. Ghosts live anywhere. They're subtle beings. They can be anywhere. They don't have any specific place. But it's described that they usually reside in unclean places. Ghosts and spirits. And if one is unclean oneself, then there is a good chance that they can attack. But wherever there is chanting of the holy names, then no ghost attacks. One of faith.
Even though
unbelief. Well, one who is chanting the holy names and internally clean will be externally clean. Because one who is internally clean will be in the mode of goodness, and being in the mode of goodness, he will maintain external cleanliness. So therefore it is said, one who is internally clean will be externally clean, but the vice versa doesn't hold true. One who is externally clean need not be internally clean. Others, we could have all the software companies and all these people being pure devotees, it doesn't happen that way.
One barometer, if I know I chanted my japa nicely in the morning, is if I automatically clean my ashram.
Okay, thank you.
I want to ask, did we discuss the verses from 16 to 22? Were we discussing these verses?
16 to 20, we were discussing that only, no?
Oh, 20. Did we discuss the verse 16 to 19?
16 to 19 was discussing about Vishwarup,
yeah.
Right? And all these various examples where, just like in the 7th chapter, we had those examples from 8 to 12. Like taste of water and song, how we can see Krishna in different aspects of the Lord's creation. So, no, it's relevant, but they're easy examples to understand, so we didn't go into great detail. So you can just read on your own. So that's fine. Okay, and there's... Okay, we finished, I suppose, the section till 20. Okay, read this. This is on this verse, Yandi Devrata. Quickly, somebody read, please.
Read the product. Therefore, Krishna says, Yanti Deva Vrata Deva, Devam, Bhagavad Gita 9:25. How you nonsense say that everyone goes to God? This is nonsense. You can go to Shiva, you can go to Israel, you can go.
There are so many planets and you go there, and that is reasonable. And how do you say that whatever tickets I purchase, I go to this deity? Therefore, they are nonsense, Muda, Rascal. They don't know what is God, what is demigod, what is Lord Shiva, what is Lord Vishnu, Brahma. They do not know. If a woman says, oh, everyone is my husband, then she is a rascal, that's all.
Right, so, Prabhupada is being quite heavy. So, this is the popular philosophy of Yatamat Tatapat. You follow any path, you'll get the same destination. Prabhupada defeats it by simple logic. You can't purchase a ticket and go anywhere. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki
Jai.
Okay, Michael, let's go to the next one. Okay, and so we have the last section of this chapter, of the most important verses of this chapter. Okay, the most important verses of the chapter are these concluding verses of the chapter. Let's recite our famous verse number 26. Patram pushpam padam toyam yo me bhaktya prayasati tadaham bhakti uparitam ashnami prayatmanaha. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit or water, I will accept it. Okay, so we already discussed on this important aspect of devotion. Here Krishna is using this word bhakti twice. Yome bhaktya prayachati and tadaham bhakti uparitam. And what is meant by this devotion? We already discussed yesterday what is meant by love and devotion. Okay, so we are not going to that discussion again. But again, we have an interesting commentary which brings out some important points. 26 to 34, glories of directly worshipping Krishna. Okay, so that's the section. And so this is directly Krishna is telling the glories of his own devotional service. Please read this.
For the worshippers of the Devata, there is a great trouble. But this is not so for my devotees. In this verse, the word Bhakti,
Bhaktya,
in the instrumental case, literally means by the devotional process. But then with the next phrase, Bhakti Uparitam, offered by the process of Bhakti, there will be unnecessary repetition.
The sentence would read, I accept that which is offered by the devotion from whoever offers by the devotion. Thus the word bhaktya in this verse should mean bhaktya sahita, indicating in this sentence a person endowed with genuine devotion, a real devotee. Thus the meaning should be, I accept that which is offered with bhakti from the real devotee, even if he gives just a leaf, flower, fruit, or one.
Go ahead.
Thus, I do not accept what is offered by persons who are not my devotees, who have only some temporary spurt of devotion. But whatever my devotee gives, I enjoy it in a suitable way, Vaishnami. What type of offering is it? He does not offer it because someone told him to offer it, but he gives it out of love, Bhakti Upahayana. But if my devotee has an impure body, I do not accept even that offering. He must have a pure body, prayatatmana, ritually pure body. This excludes persons from offering during menstrual cycle or with other impurities. However, the word prayatatmana can also mean a person with pure mind. No one except my devotee has a pure mind. The sign of their purity is the fact that they cannot give up the service to my lotus feet. Even if there is a trace of lust or anger, it is insignificant, like the bite of a toothless snake.
Right, so when he's speaking about that bhakti twice, so he says that it essentially refers to, I accept that which is offered with bhakti, that is one bhakti, from the real devotee who has bhakti. Right? So that's how, so otherwise the word would simply be repetitive. And so therefore that's how he's explaining it. So it means that the real devotee, that means one who has bhakti, he offers with bhakti. Right, he offers with devotion. So that means, see, I can say I have bhakti, but that's not sufficient. I have to exhibit that bhakti in the offering that I'm making, in the quality of the offering that I'm making. Then I show that I have bhakti actually. Right, so on one hand, so the devotee himself has to be a real devotee in that he's practicing pure devotional service. And at the same time, that offering that he's making, that also must be with bhakti. Hope you're getting the point? Right? So, it has to be a devotee. Who is making the offering? In the first place, it has to be a devotee. Right? It has to be a devotee who is practicing pure devotional service. But while making the offering, it's not that he does it ritualistically. He offers whatever he's offering also with bhakti. And as we discussed the example of Raghava Pandit yesterday, that he's seeing the quality of the offering, that is what it means to have devotion. Okay, this is one important point. The other important point is, and so therefore, I do not accept what is offered by persons who are not my devotees, or only some temporary spurt of devotion. So Krishna accepts only what is offered by devotees. And so therefore, we find Raghunath Das Goswami's pastime, we see that how when Mahaprabhu, initially when Raghunath Das Goswami, he came to meet Mahaprabhu, he was getting money from his parents, and with that money he was purchasing Jagannath Mahaprasad and offering it to Mahaprabhu. And then later on, Raghunath Das Goswami stops it. He doesn't do that anymore. And so Mahaprabhu is sort of course he knows everything, but still, he asks Swarup Damodar Goswami, why is it that Raghunath has stopped offering? And Swarup Damodar Goswami replies, now Raghunath thinks like this. Why should I buy these offerings with the money from my parents who are materialistic devotees? So why should I take that contaminated money and with that buy the offering? The Lord will not be very pleased by this. And so therefore he has stopped. And Mahaprabhu appreciated that. He said yes. And Prabhupada gives some very wonderful purpose in that connection, where he writes this famous verse, Vishaira Anna Khaila Dushta Hoya Man. And then the next line says something like that, Dushta Man Nahi Krishnera Smaran.
So when we eat food which is cooked by one who is contaminated, Dushtaman, whose mind is contaminated, what happens? Our own mind becomes contaminated. And then with that contaminated mind, it's not possible to remember Krishna. And so therefore, and that's what Krishna himself is saying, I do not accept from those people who are not my devotees. So therefore, we often say what is best is food that is grown by devotees and cooked by devotees, offered by devotees, that is best. Yes, served by devotees, yes, that's best. Right. So the point is that, so if non-devotees are making offering, then Krishna actually doesn't accept the offering. And Krishna says, I accept only from my devotees. Okay, this is another important point. Another important point is this prayatatmanaha. Prayatatmana refers to ritually pure body, means the external body itself. So therefore, one of the most important aspects of deity worship is cleanliness, as we discussed yesterday also about Raghav Pandit, not just cleanliness for the sake of it, but then actually for the pleasure of the Lord, because that's an important aspect of deity worship. And the Lord is asking for it here by the word prayatatmana. Right? So somebody who is not externally clean, then he cannot make the offering. He has to be externally clean, therefore before making the offering one has to take bath and so on. So that's also an important point. So one cannot think that that's just a ritual. Here the Lord is actually asking for it. And so therefore one devotee made an interesting statement. He said that on the path of Vedi Sadhana Bhakti, actually love is manifested in rules and regulations. At our level, following rules and regulations is a manifestation of love. Because we don't have spontaneous love. Until the point we don't have spontaneous love, then for us, following rules and regulations becomes essential. That's a manifestation of our love. Just like there is this, for spontaneous love, if one is on a really spontaneous love, then one need not follow rules and regulations. Then cleanliness, no cleanliness, it really doesn't matter. But till the point one is not on that platform, then one has to follow. Krishna is asking for it. Just like there is this little esoteric story, I was in two minds whether to say it or not. But anyways, I'll tell it. So, actually once Sanatana Goswami, he was in his meditation. And as we know, the Goswami is very elevated in their meditation, they actually meditate on Krishna's pastimes. So he's meditating on Krishna's pastimes, and so Krishna and the cowherd boys, they're playing some game with some ball and things like that. And so Sanatana Goswami is watching that in his meditation, and he sees that, okay, the boys are playing with ball, and the ball goes into one house. Now one of the Brajvasis, the ball goes into the house, and the boys go behind and they also enter the house. And Sanatana Goswami also goes with them into that house. And so this was somewhat in the early morning hours actually, And so these boys go inside, Sanatana Goswami also goes inside. And there the Vrajvasi lady, she's cooking, and in Vrindavan, everyone is cooking for Krishna's pleasure. So she's cooking khichdi for Krishna's pleasure. She's cooking khichdi. And it's in the early morning hours, and in the villages, they brush their teeth with neem sticks. Right? Neem sticks they use for brushing the teeth. So she's brushing her teeth with a neem stick, and the same time she's cooking the khichdi. And not only that, but as she's cooking, in between she's taking the neem stick, stirring the khichdi, and once again. So Sanatana Goswami saw that, and he was a little bewildered. He went up to the lady and said, Mata, this is Bhagwan. You're cooking for Bhagwan. There have to be some standards, some rules and regulations should be followed. This is not so good.
have a bath, be clean, and then you cook. So, so Sanatana Goswami was like the guru of Vrindavan. So obviously nobody wants to displease him. So next day again some similar pastime happened, and once again, you know, Krishna and the boys, they went to the lady's house, and Sanatana Goswami also went. And this time the lady had taken a bath, she was totally clean, and she was not doing any of that stuff, the brushing teeth and things like that. And she was totally clean and she was cooking. But this time Krishna was sitting in the corner and he was very unhappy. He was sitting so morose. And so Sanatana Goswami got the point. Right, so that's spontaneous love, right? So we can never imagine that, or we can never think of that. But but as far as we are concerned, Krishna is saying what is required for us is prayatatmana, ritually pure body. So we actually have to be clean externally in all respects, follow the deity worship standards. That's essential. That's our love on the way to platform. We cannot. Oh yeah, Shabri also, yeah, she's tasting the fruits and she's offering it to the Lord. Yeah, that's right. Okay, that's 9.5. Any doubts on this verse? Any questions? Okay, we have two, and we're taking only two.
Just a quick question about the purport. Prabhupada here says, the only qualification required in this connection is to be a pure devotee of the Lord. Then he says, it does not matter what one is or where one is situated, and
yes,
they can achieve the results without any kind of qualification.
Yes.
How do we understand
you? Yeah, so yes, Prabhupada is making that important statement, that's right. The only qualification that's required is to be a pure devotee.
But you mean a practice?
Oh, wait, just a second. He says the process of achieving such a marvelous result is very easy and can be attempted even by the poorest of the poor without any kind of qualification. The Acharya explains that here we can see Krishna interestingly is using only singular, he's not even using plural. He's saying a leaf, a flower, a fruit, a water. He's not even using plural, singular. So that's what Prabhupada says, even the poorest of the poor can give. And just in that connection, one of the acharyas, he makes a commentary that actually flower do we eat or smell?
No.
We normally smell a flower, right? But here Krishna is saying he eats it. So the Acharya says that actually when somebody offers with love and devotion, Krishna is in so much ecstasy that he even eats the flower. Yeah, there are some flowers, yeah, there are some, but usually flowers smell, okay? Yeah, that's right, yeah, that's also a good one, yes, Vidura's wife offering the banana peels and throwing the banana away. So Krishna was so much absorbed in that love and devotion that he ate the banana peel. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right, so then Prabhupada says, the only qualification required in this connection is to be a pure devotee of the Lord. So the question arises, who is a pure devotee? Chaitanya Charitamrita explains, and we know that famous pastime of Srila Prabhupada, when Srila Prabhupada was asked, how many pure devotees are there in the moment? What was Prabhupada's reply? Yes, how many devotees are there? That many pure devotees. So Chaitanya Charitamrita gives the explanation. So the understanding is, anyone who is practicing the process of pure devotional service is a pure devotee. Even though he may not be completely purified, but because he's sincerely following, he is called a pure devotee, because it's just a matter of time that he's going to be purified. Right, so that's the definition of pure devotee according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So anyone who is sincerely following the process of pure devotional service can actually be called a pure devotee.
Is it also correct to say that, I heard this from some other devotees, that we're offering it to Prabhupada, it wasn't free devotee, and Prabhupada's offering it to Krishna. Is that a correct understanding?
Yeah, that's also a correct understanding. That's also right. That is, of course, we don't offer Krishna directly, and we offer our spiritual master, we offer Srila Prabhupada, and then it goes in parampara. That's also one understanding. Yeah, that's true. And what was the other thing, Michael? What did you say? You said this statement, the only qualification required in this connection is to be a pure devotee. And then? It does not matter what one is or where one is situated. Right. So it does not matter whether one is rich or poor or literate, illiterate. It doesn't matter. All what one requires is basically that love and devotion. Yes, Adi Krishna, what do you think?
except that paragraph, the second line, bhakti is never causal.
Yes. Yes, bhakti is never causal. There's no cause for bhakti. What is the cause for bhakti? We just discussed that the other day. What's the cause for bhakti? Bhakti. Bhakti sanjayate bhakti. There's no other cause for bhakti. Right? Bhakti doesn't come by material punya. The bhakti doesn't come because of performing some other activity. The bhakti does not come because of giving in charity. It does not come because of doing austerities. It does not come because of any other reason. The only reason for getting bhakti is bhakti. So therefore it said bhakti is not possible. Okay, fine. Now, the next verse. Okay, please read this. Krishna and in proper section.
Krishna is the Tamari. He is self-satisfied, purna. But if this devotee offers him something with love and affection, then he accepts. So do not think that we have made such nice, sumptuous place for Krishna. Krishna must eat. No, there is no such thing. But you cannot make Krishna much. That is not possible. So Krishna will see how much you have love for him. Then he will accept. Otherwise, he will reject.
So, Krishna doesn't require anything. Krishna is mercifully giving us his service so that we can get purified by the service. Otherwise, Krishna has hundreds of Lakshmis to serve in the spiritual world. Yeah, that's right. Krishna refused to go to the home of Duryodhana because he didn't have love.
This word Purna, means it exactly the same as Atmarama?
No, Purna basically means complete. But within that is Atmarama also. Yeah, it's completely self-satisfied. Okay, please read this.
Whom shall I believe? A loafer like you or Krishna?
So one of the members of the Arya Samaji, they do not favor the temple worship. So he asked me, Swamiji, do you think God eats? I said, yes. Then how do you think? Because God says, I eat. Here is Krishna, Ashnami. So God says, I eat. Who are you that he does not eat? I replied him like that. Who are you? You say that God does not eat, but here God says, I eat. So whom shall I believe? A loafer like you or Krishna?
Yes, he eats. He actually eats. Yeah, so he actually means what? He eats. Yes, he eats. Right, somebody was saying, when we actually make the offering in the altar, Krishna actually puts his flute aside and eats. Yeah? Yeah, you can read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You can read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Antya Leela, you know, about some of these pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, how they are relishing Mahaprasad. There's an entire chapter on how these devotees are relishing Mahaprasad because actually they're tasting the saliva of Krishna. You can read that. Right, so and we have these famous pastimes where Krishna actually ate. There are all these pastimes where Krishna is reciprocating with Kishore Gopinath, Sakshi Gopal, okay, Mukunda's son, Raghunandan, right? And maybe some examples in your contemplations.
I heard that in some temples that after feeding the deities very nicely for some time that they outgrow their clothes. They get heavy, they have to sew new clothes for them.
That's interesting. Right, so we have all these examples when Krishna actually came and ate. You know, we all know that pastime of Raghunandan Thakur. Right, so when his father Mukunda actually saw Krishna coming and eating, Gopinath actually ate. Yes,
I have a personal experience.
You have to say which place.
Where?
So maybe you can come here and say.
So one day I was arranging the offering plate, and for the night offering, it is a simple offering there, only some puri or sabji, and to sweet mari and milk, hardman, that's it. So on that particular day, I was arranging a plate, and again, after it came from the altar, I took and transferred the prasad to the vessel, serving machine. So I was particularly doing it very carefully that for every offering I'm placing a fellowship of man, every time. I don't miss to do it. So that day I was seeing fellowship on every offering, on all the offerings. So after the offering came from the altar, I did see fellowship in the stall and another stuff which is kept
the body shape, you're talking about the body shape.
Yes.
So you know that what do you call in English? You know the at the end of the of a meal they give
It's some kind of minty.
Yeah, it's basically a mouth freshener. So.
Or something
Fennel. So I didn't see the foolish leaves and the blood which came from the altar. So my Guru Maharaj is also known as Devata Goswami. I mean, that temple is particularly non-different from Vrindavan. So those deities, who are in this personality now, I'm missing all that. Even, and they're very reciprocating. Even to me, when I'm not a Brahmin even, I'm just challenging the slaves, they are reciprocating to me. So they accept personally.
I'm the witness
for them.
Good. Okay, fine. So we have so many different examples of deities reciprocating with the devotees. Let's go to the next verse. Yat karoshi yadashnasi yat juroshi dadasi yat yat tapasyasi tauteya tat kurushva marhartanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. So here at this point, we see Krishna has been speaking so many glories about his devotional service right from the beginning of the 9th chapter. And at this point of time, Arjuna has a question. Okay, you're talking all this, but what should I do? What do you want me to do? What is my level? So then Krishna is giving a direct instruction to Arjuna. He's saying, this is your level. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, do it as an offering for me. So now, coming back to a little revision of the yoga ladder. Which stage is this on the yoga ladder?
Karma yoga.
What do you say?
Karma yoga.
What do you say?
I would.
Okay, not yet realized. Okay.
Karma kanda.
Karma yoga. Karma yoga.
Karma yoga. Bhakti yoga. Karma vishya. Bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga.
Okay. So if you say karma yoga, why do you say it's karma yoga?
Because Krishna's not saying, I want you to do this and for me. He's saying, whatever you do, do it for me. Like, he's not saying what. He's not giving direct instructions on what to do. It's like whatever he ends up doing, make sure you.
Mm. So why do you say it's bhakti? You said it's bhakti, right? Why do you say it's bhakti?
Because Krishna uses
what. So what's the difference? What's the essential difference between bhakti and karma yoga? Karma yoga.
You perform the same duty
mm-hmm.
as an
attachment to the duty as an
offering
to the Lord. Here it is whatever. So there is no restriction in what activity you are choosing.
And in bhakti, what happens? In bhakti, what happens?
If you have plenty of freedom, you have free will because you are doing out of.
You say it's bhakti.
This is bhakti. Yeah.
In bhakti, you can do whatever you want.
Whatever you want means that is pleasing to the Lord. At the same point.
So I can decide. Maybe going to the movies is pleasing to the Lord, no?
Sure.
Going to movies, outside movies, pleasing to the Lord, right?
There is people who are watching the movies, but still they can think of the Lord.
In
some movies, but.
Quite interesting. Yeah, everything is in the heart, right? Yeah, you can see the movie and in the heart you think of Krishna. So it's all fine.
It's all heart, Vrindavan.
So wherever I travel is Vrindavan.
I can see what I travel like. There is one devotee in the bed. He's painting on the movie Matrix. So he goes and he talks about the movie Matrix. And then showers some philosophy of what he
has done. Okay, fine. So we're coming to a much more basic concept. So in bhakti, we do whatever we want? Yes, true. What do you think? No, just answer my question. In bhakti, do we do what we like to do?
No.
Then on what basis do you do?
What pleases Krishna.
Yes, what pleases Krishna. How do we know what pleases Krishna?
We ask him.
Yes, we follow the orders of the spiritual master. That's the difference between bhakti and karma yoga. In karma yoga, I can do what I like to do and I offer the fruits to Krishna. I can do any activity and I can offer the fruits. So that is karma yoga. But in bhakti, the activity itself is decided by Krishna. And I also offer the fruits to Krishna. That's bhakti. In bhakti, the activity itself is an offering to Krishna. So I do what the spiritual master asked me to do, what the Vaishnavas want me to do, I do that, and the fruit also I offer to Krishna. In karma yoga, I have a choice. I can do an activity which I like to do, right? I can distribute, I can go for book distribution, or maybe I can stitch some clothes for the deity, or activity I like to do, I do it and then I offer the fruits to Krishna. So that's karma yoga. Karma yoga, the essential definition of karma yoga is the person is still attached to the activity but he renounces the fruits of the activity. That is karma yoga. Is this basic concept clear? Yes, Prabhu?
Yes, so according to this definition it appears that I am a karma yogi. Saying objectively, as a member of ISKCON, should I be thinking that I'm doing bhakti yoga, but actually I'm doing karma yoga, technically.
Okay.
Just speaking for myself.
Yes. So in one sense, yes, as that's the reason why Krishna has discussed Mishra Bhakti. Karma Mishra Bhakti, Jnana Mishra Bhakti. So one could have contaminations of karma or jnana within one's practice of devotional service. So I may be practicing bhakti, but a contamination of karma within practice of bhakti means what? Means that I'm practicing devotional service, but I like to do the activity which I want and then I offer the fruits. So that is essentially Karma Mishra Bhakti. Pure bhakti means that I have no desire of my own at all. That means I just follow the instructions which I receive. I'm told to do a particular activity, I do it, and whatever fruits are there, I offer it to Krishna. So that is pure bhakti yoga. But there could be a contamination. Now, just to add to the point. Now, even though, so I could have certain propensities. I like to do certain activity. Okay? Suppose I like to say go for book distribution, and so my temple authorities ask me, so what service would you like to do? And I say I like to do book distribution. So now the temple authorities say, okay, fine, go ahead, do book distribution. So now, because even though that is my propensity, but now because it has been authorized by the superior Vaishnavas, therefore this becomes bhakti yoga. The only thing that makes it bhakti yoga is the authority. When it's authorized by the spiritual master, by the superior Vaishnavas, that's what makes it bhakti. But then if the temple authority says, no, I don't think so, you should do book distribution. I think so, we need somebody to cook in the kitchen. Please do that. Sorry, sir. If I say, no, I am going to do book distribution. So then, if I'm attached to what I want to do, then it becomes karma mishra bhakti. Right? But then, if I express my desire and it is sanctioned by the superior Vaishnava, then it becomes bhakti, because it is under the direction of the superior Vaishnavas. I hope this point is clear.
Is there a shastric reference to this?
No. This is what is bhakti. In fact, that's what Krishna is speaking about from the Bhagavad Gita. Whenever he speaks about bhakti, mai sarvani karmani sanyasyadhyatma chetasa, 3.30. He's saying, do the activity only for me. Mai sarvani karmani, all activities, do it for me. Right? I'm telling you to fight, you fight. This is bhakti. Right? But here, just a second. But here, Krishna is telling Arjuna, my dear Arjuna, you are not on that platform. Therefore, he's telling Arjuna, this is your platform. Yad karoshi, do whatever you like and just offer the fruits to me. He's telling Arjuna, you are not on that platform of pure devotional service. Of course, we know this whole thing is a leela, but then he's telling Arjuna, this is the platform on which you are is not pure devotional service. Your platform is karma yoga. And so you perform devotional service on this platform. We don't want to go in more technical details. Actually, this is not even karma yoga. It is a stage between karma yoga and bhakti yoga. And the reason is because, Vishnu Chakravarti explains, because in karma yoga, ideally, by definition, one offers only the fruits of one's prescribed duties to Krishna. Like, prescribed duties means Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. These are prescribed duties. One performs prescribed duties and offers the fruits. That is karma yoga. But here Krishna is saying, whatever you do. So therefore, actually, it's something in between karma yoga and bhakti yoga, which he counts it as karma jnana mishra pradani bhuta bhakti. Okay, so that's the technical level of this verse. Okay, so we don't want to go into those technical details. But if you see, therefore Prabhupada doesn't get into all this. Prabhupada usually speaks about this verse as being karma yoga. Please read this.
In the beginning, one cannot take to pure bhakti yoga. Karma yoga means yat karoshi, yat ashnasi, yat juhoshi, tadasi, tadasi. That is karma yoga. Whatever you are doing, in the beginning, one cannot take to pure bhakti yoga. Therefore, karma yoga is recommended. Never mind whatever you are doing. In that position, you can become a devotee. Karma yoga, that is, people are interested in different types of work. So therefore, Krishna says, yat karoshi. Never mind whatever you are doing. So how it becomes karma yoga, now
Krishna
you give it to me.
Right. So Prabhupada usually refers to this verse as being the platform of karma yoga, right, without going into more technical details. Yes.
I just wondering if we could consider Shastra as their authority, because in Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada Maharaj says that there are 9 processes of devotion, so if we consider them as bhakti, then if we choose one of these activities, will it be considered as bhakti yoga as well when we're doing it for Krishna?
When we
nine
do
processes of devotion.
Yeah, there are 9 processes of devotional service. Okay, fine.
Yeah. So this means that if we do that, it will be considered as bhakti yoga.
Yes.
So if we choose according to this authority of Srimad Bhagavatam, will this be bhakti yoga? without sanctioning from the spiritual master, or, you know.
See, those are 9 processes of devotional service. Right, and within each process, whether it is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, whatever process you take, within that process, either we could do it as pure bhakti, or we could do it with contamination. It depends on us. For example, you know, see, within Dasyam, Dasyam is one of the 9 processes, right, Dasyam. So, Dasyam means basically serving the Lord. Right, so it could refer to any activity where we are serving the Lord. But the important point is the service authorized by the superior Vaishnava, the spiritual master, or is it an activity which I like to do and I'm often doing?
But if our main motivation
is that Krishna said or Brahmana said that it's not only on the basis of I want.
But how do we know? Prahlad Maharaj is giving a very general 9 processes. He's talking of Shravanam, Kirtanam. He's speaking about very generally. But the particular activity which I am doing, how do I know whether this is what Krishna wants me to do? What is the way of testing that? What is the way of checking that an activity which I want to do is what Krishna wants me to do? How do we check it? Yes, Guru Sanatana. So it could be any of those 9 processes of devotional service, but unless and until it is sanctioned by the superior Vaishnavas, how do I know this is what Krishna wants me to do?
Because Prahlad Maharaj says.
Okay. What? Yes, because Prahlad Maharaj says. But then, what about the entire parampara in between? How do I jump?
We don't
have a book
that,
like,
that's our guru.
The book
is not our guru. We have a personal relationship with that person. They can tell you
here in Maya. Yeah, here. That's the question. Yeah, so that's the point. So you're saying I'll take directly Shishya from Pranad Maharaj, but is Pranad Maharaj available for you today to tell you whether the activity which you're doing is right or wrong?
I have an impression that you don't need that. If you have like a standard, you know, these are 9 things, for example.
See, the 9 things are very broad, isn't it? Shravanam Kirtanam. Shravanam is simply, it means hearing. Yeah? Hearing.
Vishnu.
Yes, it's about Vishnu, that's right. But I could be hearing or reading, you know, one of those esoteric books. No, it's perfectly about Vishnu. What are you saying? Okay, well, Govinda Leelamrita or what? And a name is not striking me because I don't read them too much. So, but then, you know, one of the esoteric books you could read and say, yes, it's about Krishna, it's about Vishnu, it's perfect, isn't it?
No.
Then how do you know that?
Well, Srila Prabhupada gave, you know.
Yes, now you're coming down to Srila Prabhupada.
But Srimad Bhagavatam, which I read, is also from Srimad.
Yes, that's right.
So it's totally by Srila Prabhupada.
No, so that's the point. The point is this. The point is very simple. You cannot jump. That's the point. Yes, Prabhupada Maharaj has said something very general. But then the practical application of that, how do we know whether we are on the right path or not? How do we know that? So yes, our mind could justify and speculate and do all sorts of things. That's the nature of the mind. Right? The mind could just, there are so many people doing so many things. And they're all justifying it in the name of devotional service. Right? There are enough examples for that. People who are doing weird things. And they justify all of that in the name of devotional service. And they think they're doing right. And they're going totally off track. You ask them, they'll say, we are perfectly right. But they're going totally off track. Why? Only for this one reason. Only for this one reason. They don't follow Guru Sadhu Shastra. Therefore, the Shastra, what is the Shastric verse? Which is saying, Ekantiki Hare Bhakti Shruti Smriti Puranadi Panchanatrika Vinim Vina Ekantiki Hare Bhakti Utpateva Kalpate.
That devotional service which does not follow Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatriki Vidhim Vina, without following the Shastra, Ekantiki Harir Bhakti, one is whimsically performing devotional service, the result is Utpat, havoc. That's the only result. Therefore, yes, we have some general instructions which are there in the Shastra, which are given by our Acharyas, Goswamis, but how to practically implement that, put it into practice within our devotional lives, you need some guidance for that. Without that guidance, the mind will simply create havoc. And if you want examples, you go somewhere. Go around Maipur, maybe you'll find some examples. Go to Radhakund, you'll find some examples.
It was there in the past tense of Prabhupada, like one of the disciples said.
Oh, there are enough examples. There are enough examples. There are enough examples for that. Never trust the mind. Right? One will say, oh yes, Prabhupada Maharaj just said. Prabhupada Maharaj just said so many things. Right? And I can justify everything to be right. And I can, my mind will give me perfect justification to fit whatever I am doing in one of those 9 processes. But I need some. Yeah, one will find some proper set codes to justify what one is doing. One can, if the mind wants to justify, there are enough number of ways. One needs some living person who is there to guide you. That is a must. Okay.
It said that for one who considers himself his own guru, he has a fool for a disciple.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, when we study the 10th chapter, actually this point comes up. Okay, so now going to the next verse. Samavam sarva bhuteshu na me dvaishasti na priyaha ye vajanti tu maam bhaktya mai teteshu chapyaham. So here Krishna is establishing his relationship with his devotees. I envy no one nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also friend to him. So here, this samoham sarva bhuteshu na me dvesho asti na priya, this refers to which feature of the Lord? The Paramatma feature. Right? The Paramatma, he is neutral. So he says, I envy no one, I'm not partial to anyone, I'm equal to anyone, to everyone, whoever, whatever activities. Just like the example of the two birds sitting on the tree. You know the example? Right, so one bird is eating the sweet fruits, bitter fruits, and the other bird is just watching. That's the Paramatma feature. But as far as the Lord is concerned, as Bhagwan feature, he says, I am not like that. As far as I am concerned, ye bhajanti tu maam bhaktya, one who is a devotee, then he is a friend in me, and I am also a friend. So that's the Bhagwan feature. He reciprocates with his devotees. See, he's not just neutral, but Bhagwan feature, the Shamsundar form, he reciprocates with his devotees. Okay, please read this, some important part of this purpose. No, you already read something. Somebody who has not read. Yes, somebody.
One more question. Yeah, that is Krishna is equal to everyone and no one is his. One more question here, that if Krishna is equal to everyone and no one is his special friend, then why does he take a special interest in devotees who are always engaged in his transcendental service? Well, this is not discrimination. It is natural. Any man in this material world may be very charitably disposed, yet he has a special interest in his own children. The Lord claims that every living entity, in whatever form, is his son, and so he provides everyone with a generous supply of the necessities of life. He is just like a cloud which pours rain all over, regardless of whether it falls on rock or land or water. But for his devotees, he gives specific attention. Such devotees are mentioned here. They are always in Krishna consciousness, and therefore they are always transcendentally situated in Krishna.
Right, so for the people in general, for every living entity, every living entity is a sun, and so it provides for everyone. Right, whether somebody is an atheist, somebody is criticizing him, blaspheming him, somebody saying God is dead, but still God provides. Right, so just like the rain, which has general supply on every, it pours everywhere, rock or land or water, everywhere. So similarly, the Lord is providing for everyone. But for his devotee, he takes special attention. He gives specific attention. But for his devotees, he gives specific attention. Right? So that's the special relationship. And that's why one of the qualities of the Lord is described as? Yes, bhakta vatsa. And vatsa means chest. The Lord keeps the devotees very close to his chest. So that's the specific nature of the Lord. That's the specific relationship of the Lord with his devotees. Okay, now before I go to the next... okay, you have some questions?
Prabhu, if you could please go back. Regarding the man who is taxable and especially because of his children, certainly I'm not qualified to comment on Prabhupada's analogy, but I find this analogy defeats itself because the Lord is the father of everyone, and he should be equal to everyone as their own son, and he should be shown special to all. Or am I taking the analogy too much?
So what's the question?
The analogy kind of fails to some extent when I think about it.
The analogy is specifically applicable for the first part, Samoham Sarvabhutesha.
Okay, so not today, sir.
No. It's only referring to the first part, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu, Namedveshanastu. So just like the rain is falling everywhere, similarly the Lord is equally disposed to everyone and is providing for everyone. Okay, now I have a question for all of you. We have the last few verses of this chapter which are very, very important. Are you ready to hear or are you tired?
No.
Okay, so we follow the we follow the democracy system of democracy. Okay, so how many of you want us to continue the class? Rujit and Prabhu, come here, count.
It means beyond 1:30, right?
No.
Oh, then no problem. 10 minutes, no problem.
Up to 1:30.
Well, if we want to, if we have to complete the chapter, it may take a little more than 1:30. Maybe about 5-10 minutes more. So how many of you wouldn't like the class? We want the class to be completed right now.
Is it okay if I leave at 1:30? I have arrangements for this afternoon.
Okay. So you can leave, but then you're missing out something very vital.
Okay, then I'll leave.
Okay, so how many would want the class to end right now?
Can we continue?
Please continue, Prabhu.
You want? Okay, so on the basis of majority...
We are running out of time.
Yes.
And not this time. Only 2 weeks we have. Next,
Okay, I think so we'll complete it because then we lose the flow of the chapter actually.
Yeah?
Okay, fine. Yeah, if you have any questions on the chapter, write them down and we'll answer them on Monday. Okay, fine. So let's recite this.
Api chetu durasharo bhajate maam ananyava sadhuveva mantavya samya vyasato nita.
Even if one comments, now you see how Krishna is flowing with the verses. In the previous verse he said, yes, I'm equally disposed to everyone, but my devotee, he is very special. And now in the next few verses Krishna is explaining, elaborating that point, how his devotee is special to him. And this is the real essence of the chapter actually, that how Krishna has this special, special love for his devotees and how he reciprocates with them. If we actually understand these verses, our love for the Lord, our love for devotional service, our faith in devotional service, all of it will greatly increase if we carefully study these verses. They are the essence of this chapter. Krishna himself is speaking the glories of his devotees and devotional service. So here he is saying, that devotee who is very dear, even if he commits the most abominable action, but if he is engaged in devotional service, Krishna is saying, I consider him saintly. I consider him sadhu. And now, this purport is very interesting, which really explains it. Somebody like to read this?
My attachment to my devotee is my very nature. That attachment does not decrease, even if the devotee commits wrong, for I make him come up to the highest standing. If someone with bad conduct, addicted to violence, thievery, or adultery,
right, so it's not just durachar, it is sudurachar, extremely bad.
Worships me and worships no one except me, and does not follow any other processes like karma or jnana, and has no other desire than my desire, ananyabhak, he is my devotee.
So, here Vishnu Chaitanya has explained the meaning of that sudurachar. What does that sudurachar mean? It means an extremely abominable activity like violence, thievery, adultery. That is the meaning of sudurachar. But, bhajate mam ananya bhak. Now what does that bhajate mam ananya bhak mean? It means three things. What are those three things? He worships me and worships no one except me. That's the first thing. Second thing is, he does not follow any other process like karma or jnana. That's the second thing. And the third thing is, he has no other desire than my desire. These are the three things which constitute ananya bhak. So even though he has committed this abominable action, he never gives up devotional service. He is fixed. He is fixed in his devotional service. That's the important point. Now, Arjuna is asking a question. He says, but considering his bad conduct, how is he a devotee? You know, if he has committed such abominable activities, how do you call him a devotee? And Krishna says, he is to be respected as a devotee because of his devotee qualities. It is a command. Krishna is saying, it is my command. Not doing so is offense. My order is the authority. So Krishna is saying, I am saying it, that such a person is a devotee, he is a sadhu. This is my order. Who are you to say? It is my order. I am saying it, you call him sadhu. So, that's the meaning of this verse. And Srila Prabhupada, okay, there's something. So Arjuna has a further question. So he should be considered devotee in that portion where he worships you,
and as a non-devotee in that portion where he commits adultery. So Krishna says, no! He should be considered as a devotee in all his parts. You should not see his bad qualities at all. He is completely convinced. Samyak vyavasitaha. He makes a splendid resolution. This is the essence of this. He makes a splendid resolution. What is that resolution? I will go to hell for my sinful actions, which are hard to give up, but I will not give up dedicated worship of Krishna. That's his determination. He says, I am sinful. I may go to hell for these sins. Doesn't matter. But I will not give up devotion. That determination. And so the important point is that bhajate mam ananyam bhag. And Krishna and Prabhupada the acharyas explain here and in the next verse, this indicates his repentance. This is a very important part. The devotee repents. He thinks, for the sinful activities that I have done, let me go to hell. I deserve it. But I will not give up devotion. At any point of time, I will not give up devotion. That's the determination of a devotee. And when Krishna sees that determination, when Krishna sees that repentance of the devotee, Krishna is very pleased. And then Krishna is declaring, for such a devotee, I am saying he is a sadhu. You have no right to call him otherwise. You have no right to see his bad qualities. It is my order, it is my authority that you call him sadhu. Now, Srila Prabhupada explains that further, giving us an even more better understanding of the verse. Yes, please read.
On the other hand, one should not misunderstand that a devotee in transcendental devotional service can act in all kinds of abominable ways. This verse only refers to an accident due to the strong power of material connection.
Right? This verse, so somebody cannot say, oh, very nice. I can do anything I want and yet I will be called a devotee. No one should argue it is Krishna's authority. So there's every possibility of misusing this verse. And so Prabhupada is, in this entire purport you can count, Prabhupada uses the word accidental 7 times to give the message very clear that is only referring to an accidental mistake or an accidental fall down. Go ahead.
Devotional service is more or less a declaration of war against the illusionist energy. As long as one is not strong enough to fight the illusionist energy, there may be accidental fall down. But when one is strong enough, he is no longer subjected to such fall down as previously explained.
Go ahead.
No one should take advantage of this verse and commit nonsense and think that he is still a devotee. If he does not improve his character by devotional service, then it is to be understood that he is not a high devotee.
Right? So Prabhupada makes it very clear that sometimes by the power of the illusory energy, there may be an accidental fall down. Some because of previous conditionings and so on and so forth. And what is it that differentiates whether it is accidental or whether it is premeditated? Yes?
If he comes back, that was accidental.
Okay, that's one. So that means he continues in his practice of devotional service. That's, yes, that's one point. And the other point, I already mentioned it actually.
He planned it.
Huh?
He planned it ahead of time.
Yes, he doesn't plan. But then, again, there's a possibility of justification, right? Somebody may plan it and say, no, it was accidental. So, how does one know? One thing is, yes, he continues on his practice of devotional service.
Reoccurring, it happens again and again.
Okay, if it is?
Reoccurring.
Yeah, if it is, premeditated or accidental?
Oh, if it's premeditated, then.
Yes, if it's premeditated, then there's likelihood that he commits the same thing again and again. And the other thing?
repentance. One who is sincere, he will repent. And Prabhupada writes both in Parikshit Maharaj's pastime, where Parikshit Maharaj is repenting, and in the pastime of Vajjamala, you can read the purports in both these sections, where Prabhupada writes, when one sincerely repents, then the sinful reactions are burnt up in the fire of that repentance. Right? So these are two things which are important. One thing is that determination to continue on in the practice of devotional service, and the second thing is repentance. And this will, both these things will happen when it's just an accidental fall down, and it is not something which is premeditated. Okay, and then Krishna is saying, for such a person, he is still to be called a sadhu. That is the mercy of Krishna. That's Krishna's special reciprocation with his devotees. Okay, any comments on that? One.
I don't know if this is a typically Belgian phenomenon, but in Belgium we have a few, like a group of devotees who are very fixed in one sense on Krishna and on devotee life and preaching the mission, doing sankirtan and everything, but they're still drinking and smoking and all these things. So how should we behave properly towards them?
No one should take advantage of this verse and commit nonsense and think that he is still a devotee. If he does not improve in his character by devotional service, then it is to be understood that he is not a high devotee. Right? Now that answers the question. So, and then we have to associate accordingly. Right?
On the other hand, Prabhupada says that if one just sticks in the process, these things will be cleansed out.
Yes, so that's what he's saying. If he does not improve, okay, fine. We go to the next verse, which is a continuation of the same theme. Okay? Kshipram bhavati dharmatma shashvat shantim nigachati kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati. So, it's a continuation of this person who has committed sudurachar. He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace, O son of Kunti. Declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. Right, Krishna is telling Arjuna to declare. Declare it boldly. And this commentary is really beautiful. Maybe you can read
it. How can you accept the worship of such a sinful person? How can you eat the food and drink offered by a heart contaminated with lust and anger?
Right, so that's Arjuna's question. Okay, so now Krishna is answering.
Very quickly, he becomes righteous. The present is used, and not the future, to express the fact that having committed sin, by remembering the Lord, he becomes repentant, and thus very quickly becomes righteous. Oh, how unfortunate I am! There is no one as low as I. I am not even worthy to clean the place where devotees empty their bowels. I am bringing bad name to the devotees. Repeatedly, Shashvat, he feels completely, and for Nitaram, disgust, Shantim, for those actions.
Okay, so that's the important point, that how he repents, and because he repents, he becomes righteous. Go ahead.
Or, the use of the present tense can indicate that in the future he will develop righteousness fully, but even right now it exists in a subtle form. After taking medicine, though the destructive effects of fever or poison remain for some time, it is not considered seriously. Thus, with the entrance of bhakti in his mind, the sinful actions are not taken seriously.
Right, so it's just a matter of time that very soon he is going to become righteous. Go ahead.
And the traces of sin, such as lust, and anger should be considered insignificant, like the biting of a toothless snake. Thus he attains nigacchati, complete cessation of lust and anger, shantim, permanently, shasvat. In nigacchati, ni stands for nidaram, completely. This means that even during the stage of having tendency to commit sin, he has a pure heart.
Right, so the basic point is this, that it's just a matter of time. If one is sincere, if one is repentant for one's sinful activities, one sincerely continues on in the practice of devotional service, it's just a matter of time. Very soon, he's going to become righteous. And now Arjuna is raising another question. Okay.
Arjuna's question. If he eventually becomes righteous, there would be no argument. However, if a devotee is sinful right up to his death, what is his position? The Lord, affectionate to his devotees, then speaks loudly with a little anger. O son of Kunti, my devotee is not destroyed. At the time of death, he does not fall.
So now Arjuna has another argument.
But arguers with harsh tongues will not respect this. Krishna then encourages the worried, lamenting Arjuna. O Kanteya, going to the squabbling assembly with a tumultuous sound of drums, throwing your hands in the air, you should fearlessly declare this. Declare what? Declare that my devotee, the devotee of the Supreme Lord, though committing sin, does not perish, but rather reaches success. Arguments defeated, pride deflated, they should undoubtedly respect you as a guru. This is Sridhar Swami's explanation. But why does the Lord order Arjuna to declare this when he himself can do it? As he will later say, Mam evasyasi satyam te patijane priyosime. I declare to you that you will truly come to me. You are very dear to me. Bhagavad Gita 1865. In the same way, why does he not now say, I declare, Kanteya, that my devotee does not perish? The reason is explained here. The Lord considered as follows. Being affectionate to my devotee and not tolerating even a slight degradation of my devotee, I will, under all circumstances, uphold the declaration made by my devotee. Whereas, I can break my own promise and accept criticism of myself. Just as, in breaking my own promise, in fighting with Bhishma, I fulfill Bhishma's promise. Thus, hearing a declaration from my mouth, the materialistic disputers will laugh, but they will accept Arjuna's declaration as if written on stone. Therefore, I will have Arjuna make the declaration. And thus, one should not accept the statements of the falsely intelligent persons who, after hearing about Ananya Bhakti, even of the greatest sinner, think that this declaration made by the pure devotee cannot be applied in cases where attachment to wife and children, sinful acts, lamentation, illusion, lust, anger, and other despicable qualities manifest.
Right, so, thank you. Right, so very wonderful commentary where Vishwanathan Thakur is wonderfully explaining the various aspects of this verse and why Krishna is telling Arjuna to declare that my devotee never perishes.
So the important point is this, that how Krishna loves his devotees so much that that's his extremely merciful nature, right? That even if a devotee commits sinful activities, just because the devotee is continuing to practice devotional service, the Lord is ready to accept that devotee as a devotee. That's the super merciful nature. And therefore Gajendra, in his prayers to the Supreme Lord, he says, the Supreme Lord is Bhuri Karunaya. Bhuri Karunaya means extremely merciful. And these verses show that extremely merciful nature of the Lord, where the Lord is ready to accept even a sinner, someone who's committed most abominable activities, sudurachar. But if one simply sticks to the process of devotional service with a repentant heart, Krishna is ready to protect that devotee in all circumstances and ultimately take him back to the spiritual world. Where can you find the Lord more merciful than this? Therefore, by studying these verses, our attachment to the Lord, our faith in the practice of devotional service should increase, should become more steadfast, because such is the merciful nature of the Lord and his devotees. Right. And so if the Lord, and so therefore in the next verse, Mami Partha Vipashuta Yepisu Papa Yonias Trio Vaishas Sadashudras Tepianti Parangatim. O son of Pritha, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, merchants, Shudras, can attain the supreme destination. This is the all-merciful nature of the Lord. Right? So what? So he said, even the Sudurachar, Krishna is saying, even Sudurachar I am ready to deliver. What to speak of Striyo Vaishyas, Shudras? Right. He's saying, if they only take shelter of me, I am ready to deliver. And this is what Lord Ramachandra, he says, when Vibhishan came to take his shelter and the monkey soldiers were arguing that this may be a demon and so on and so forth, what did Lord Ramachandra say?
No, he's come to take shelter.
He said, even if Ravan at this point of time comes to take shelter, I will give him shelter. That is the merciful nature of the Lord. Right. Anyone who takes shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, the Lord is ready to accept. The Lord is ready to protect such a devotee. Right. Okay, fine. And finally, the last verse where Krishna is directly giving instructions how we can achieve that loving devotional service and how we can please the Lord is he's telling us very clearly in the last verse. Let's recite this again. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyati yukvaivam atmana matparayanaha. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me. And worship me. Being completely absorbed in me. Surely, Krishna is saying, surely you will come to me. Krishna is giving that assurance. If one simply follows the simple instructions of Krishna, Krishna is giving the assurance that Krishna will definitely take us back to the spiritual world. Right? This is the all-merciful nature of the Lord that He has given us this simple process of devotional service, by following of which Krishna is giving an assurance that we can go back to the spiritual world. So this is the glory of devotional service which Krishna is speaking about in this chapter. Okay, so we'll stop at this point. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Shrimad Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanande.
So we just want to quick announcement. I have to leave on Monday to go to Malaysia and Singapore.